Anyway, you said, Simon, you had something you wanted to say.
I sort of got over it.
I
went to bed angry.
Why were you angry with him then?
Yeah, I pulled it up.
Was it a theological thing?
What have I done?
Simon, evolution, creation thing.
No, it wasn't anything to do with that.
Alistair McGrath, you said you got angry.
I've read half a page and then I got angry, not at what I'd read, but just at Christians in general.
Welcome to the club.
He hates Christians as well. Wow. He is one.
Well,
but then he's Polish.
No, we have much in common. But probably not for the same reason.
What were you angry about?
You never know. Hit me.
Okay.
Come on then.
I'm not that angry about it.
Oh, okay. Wait till you are and then go.
Okay.
Louis, get him angry. Get him angry.
Hit me, Louis.
Preach at him until he gets angry.
No,
right, okay, so...
Yeah, I received a very angry phone call on the train back from Nottingham. I was a bit like, oh, this is random. explain what you were angry about.
Okay, I was angry at... It was just a random thought that lingered for a bit longer than I was expecting it to. In fact, it stretched over the course of a few nights. I wasn't thinking about it during the day, but it's like... As the day wound down, I started to think about it more, and I ended up going to bed angry for about three nights in a row, which you should never do. And it was just based on my view of Christians, just quite a fundamental issue of worship and belief. And if you cross the line and say that you're a believer in God, why is the natural urge then to worship this God? Because if I put myself in that position and say I'm transported into like the future and I find myself a believer, what would go through my mind is, if that future self has gone through something or witnessed something that would prove the existence of God, who I am now, that would come hand in hand in feeling such anger that there is a God. Because if you look around and you look at the way the world is and how many people are suffering, and like the percentage of people that are happy compared to those that are hungry, like diseased and being tortured, like children that are tortured or like forced to work, and just like if you sum up the history of like the world and actually how many people have suffered, to actually know that a God is responsible for that. And okay, you can say that, you know, he created a world where that could happen, but to actually be the creator of this, I just think that if you were to believe, I can't see how belief could be married with worship, when actually it should be married with...
If you think that God is happy with the situation, I mean, God isn't happy,
but
is he?
I mean, I don't know.
An evil God would be happy with seeing all that suffering and not being moved by it.
It's like, I just feel that he created something that he doesn't necessarily have to suffer himself, but all the people in the world have to suffer through what has been created. That's what makes me quite angry, that I can't see how, for me, a belief in God can be a happy thing. I actually would find more happiness in the realization that this is there's no reason for this, and there's a slight comfort in that. But to actually know that someone's actually done this to us actually makes me quite angry and like quite, I don't know, quite bitter.
But it was never meant to be like that. I mean,
but he knew it would,
Yeah, that's getting into esoteric areas. But I mean, it's mankind's fault the way that things have gone. And
But if that's, you know, it's not everyone's fault. I mean, it's not the people that are suffering now.
But that is the way of the world, isn't it? It's the innocent that suffer, and the ones that cause the suffering get away with it.
Why should we be happy with that? And why should I just don't? When people say to me, oh, you know, it's a good thing because you're saved and he's come to save you. And I just keep on thinking that I don't. It doesn't matter. I mean, for me, I couldn't care less. When there's so many other people that
are
suffering.
You saying that that you know, by becoming a Christian, it's almost like I'm okay now, and everyone else are going on. They're all suffering.
And why should that
be? You're saying it's a selfish thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is.
It's that aspect of it that worries you.
That doesn't sit right with me at all. To actually feel good about believing in God. I think if I was in the position where I knew that there was a God, it would be despair for me. It would be I wouldn't feel nice things towards this God, because it's His creation, and He doesn't. I just think that. I don't know. It's the thing where He doesn't have to put up with what He's created. Mm. It's people with real lives, with real feelings, that we so easily just rid from our minds a lot of the time. Mm. But there are people that are going through so many bad things, and
mind you, a lot of Christians go through bad stuff, and that's sort of a different process. Being a Christian gives you joy because you know. That there's something of meaning at the end of it. It doesn't always give you happiness, though.
There's a difference between joy and happiness. Happiness is based on happenings, which is why you can watch or enjoy something one day and then be down the next. Joy is something that is long-lasting and even grows under pressure, which is why it says rejoice when you suffer all kinds of suffering, because you know that. You know, if you look at sort of people like the Barnabas Fund, that sort of people, we see. Oh, Dad's arrived.
Howard is in the building.
We see people that are under.
This is your subject.
We see, you know, with joy, you see that there are people that are under really terrible situations, and as that gets worse and worse and worse, they're pushed closer and closer to God and actually feel the greatest joy, as opposed to what we have in the West, where we have so much. But people are just losing their job for an interim of maybe 2 or 3 months and absolutely despairing because they have no joy. Their happiness is based on the practical things surrounding them in the world. That's not an excuse to say, oh, well, people that don't have much are fine, they're lucky because they have to go through, they have different joys to hold on to. But it is also an extra perspective that what we've got on in the West is not particularly great either. I'm not saying that it's worse or that we're in any way in a similar situation, because we're not. We got far too much. Yeah. But I think we're judging goodness, happiness, joy, quality of life by a very, very weird standard, because we have everything in the West and yet we're still looking for more. We still haven't got enough. We're still depressed. We've still got lots and lots of suicide going on. We've still got unhappiness and bitterness.
I think, because Simon lives in our society and through his life, he meets a lot of Christians. And I suppose it comes across to him that a lot of us seem very self-satisfied in our own way, and sort of even uncaring of all the suffering that's around. And maybe if we did live in a third world or a place where Christianity could be a bit more real, that you can actually see that the difference that being a Christian actually makes. I think it's our bad witness that has.
I think you're right. The church doesn't care for the world enough, and that's personally.
It's all our fault. Hair shirts all round.
But I think I think you're right, though. We don't care enough for people. We do have quite at times self-centered faith, and it is all about us. But at the same time, there is a dangerous extreme that we try and care for the momentary needs of people, just that, and we actually miss out the whole point, which is that there is an eternity. Which is, you know, why is God just? Because people are bad, and He will, in His justice, judge the evil that has gone on in the world. This is not a mistake or an accident, and, you know, what happens, and that's it. There is a comeuppance because God is just. And we as Christians must look after believers and non-believers that are in difficult situations, but not to look after their earthly needs at an expense of their spiritual needs as well. A lot of people, you know, you were hearing last night about people that cared for the practical needs of others and spread the gospel as well, because you can't do one without the other.
So really, should be, rather than getting angry with God, it's just our bad witness, really. You're getting a distorted view of God, in that because Christians seem like they don't care, you get the impression that God doesn't care.
Well, that wasn't my point at all.
Wasn't your point?
I was wondering why, when you become a Christian, you feel that you want to have to feel good, and why aren't more Christians? Why isn't a belief in God more alarming? And why is it a joyful thing to actually come to realize that someone's responsible?
Why aren't we burdened with?
Yeah, and why don't we? Why don't we justifiably feel hatred or contempt or, you know, feel more angry than we do? Because I see, I mean, I've got this sort of image of God as, say, the CEO of a company that whose staff has been mistreated. And why do we not feel that we can protest and feel, you know, ill will against the boss of this company that we're in?
The answer to that is in the parable that Jesus taught us about the vineyard. The tenants in the vineyard. It's not that he's the CEO of a company of which he's got complete control. He can do what he likes. But he's actually a landlord of a vineyard a long way away from him, who he entrusts to people who then abuse that power. And he sends his own representatives, prophets, in the explanation, who then go and speak of that situation. But the people then turn deaf ear. Eventually he sends his son, and his son gets killed. He says, what am I going to do? You know, I've done everything I can for this area, but they're still messing it up.
Yeah.
Finally, I've got to go and wrap it up. So it's not that God isn't in control, but it's that he is allowing us the free rein to get it right or mess it up.
And to me, that's just not satisfying
until
enough.
It gets to the point where he cannot.
But think of the alternative. Yeah. The alternative is him being actually in there. You know, okay, sorting people out. Now, do you really want that? Do you want him to come to all of us and say,
sort us all out, we would all be in trouble.
Yeah.
That's the point.
All the time.
He gives us that free reign for a reason.
Where does he stop? Does he, like, you had a bad thought there? Smack. You know, at what point does he step in or not step in?
I don't know. I'd rather he stepped in more. And rather, I don't know.
Also, the joy is that, you know, it says, I think it's in Hebrews, that we have a great high priest who can sympathise with our every need. God becoming man and still remaining God is an amazing thing. When we see God, who made every planet, every star, everything, suffered becoming a peasant, suffered living on nothing, suffered hatred, suffered scorn. Someone so great became so small that he was crushed by other people. We see that this is not a God that has not experienced
these things. Yeah, but if you
think about
it, come on, that's nothing compared to what a lot of people have to put up with in the world. Well, he lived only for 30 years. Mm-hmm. People have to live through pain their whole lives and live in slavery their whole lives, or, you know, suffer a terrible childhood. And he didn't have that. He had a nice upbringing. And, you know, up until, you know, the latest ages,
who's responsible for that suffering? Is it the creator, or is it the destroyer? Is it the one that made man fall and plunged us into this situation, or is it God? Or do you think that God is ultimately, he allowed that to happen, therefore it's his fault?
That's my
basically view, yeah, that's your sort of position. Yeah,
and you know,
I'm kind of in agreement with you to some extent.
Because
do you know what Jesus said in the so-called Beatitudes? He said that blessed or actually happy are those who are hunger and thirst after righteousness. And, you know, and that's, in a way, it's a contradictory saying, because Jesus is calling you happy if you have this attitude. And I see you have this attitude. So in a way, this is a Christian attitude, to be not content with the lack of righteousness and to really see as the things are, and you have this heart to see the things as they really are. Do you remember I was reading this passage again from the Gospel somewhere about Jesus and what do you call it in English, the Gentile woman from the Phoenicia. Do you remember this incident? And she was going after Jesus because her daughter was demon possessed. And she was going after him and begging him, you know, would you heal her? Would you heal her? And Jesus was behaving like he didn't care. And he said, even he turned out and said, you know, I was sent for the lost sheep of Israel and stuff like that. And I was really angry with that fragment because it was so. It was so contradict to whatever I thought the God's character is. Mm-hmm. You know, someone is begging, he's in need, and he's just, you know, and he's just walking away. And I got really, really angry. And then, I didn't really, I didn't really dug deep into it. But then one day, I was reading it again. Mm-hmm. And I felt God's presence, and I felt, okay, I have this chance to ask him now. So I did ask him, you know, what did you think? And that was actually a wonderful experience because I really felt Jesus crying that day. And I felt he said then to me, you know, what I was doing. And I kind of persisted in my prayer. And he said, I was praying in my heart for her not to stop. Mm-hmm. I was praying that she will not stop asking me. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering why, and then I realized that he was giving a lesson about how the reality is made, and the lesson because in every single one of us there is this picture of God we kind of have, yeah. So regardless we are believers or not, we kind of think if he is there, then he is something like that. And even if we are Christians, we see, okay, he is there and he is like that. And we can't get away with it. We have to have a current kind of vision or imagination or, you know, set of ideas about him. And obviously the set of ideas about him, I mean, unless we are really ignorant, we think this is it, this is how he is. But usually this is not how he is. And that the reason we don't know how he is because we don't approach him directly, we don't ask. And we are not there in a position to be there to ask him. Mm-hmm. God has the most broken heart you can imagine. And his suffering is, you can't imagine. Unless you're going to approach him and ask him about those things, you will never know how much he suffers. Because you can imagine how father suffers when his child is bad. And I mean, this is just a theoretical, you know, exercise. You can try to multiply it and think how God feels about us going astray or killing ourselves and stuff like that. Mm. But that's something on those lines. And, you know, when I see you, I see this heart and I see... I'm really getting now very emotional because I can't even contain, you know, this is my...
it's all about relationship.
Yeah, it is about relationship. Yeah. But I think there's something which is so right with you, but you're not addressing your concerns directly to him. You're addressing them to us. Mm. And it's just wrong. Mm. Because you need the answer straight from him.
Yeah.
So I shared a little bit of testimony, whatever you think that's your problem with it, but you need, I mean, you are in this position, you desperately need your answer from him directly. And I know when this day will come, I know, okay,
are you prophesizing him?
Yeah. Basically, since the day I met you, I know that there is a prophetical calling upon your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm taking now responsibility for whatever I say. So this is being recorded. This is being even recorded, you know.
No editing.
You can't go back now.
I can't go back. But the reason I say so because I feel it. I mean, I'm really, really convinced. And that means that you have to maintain your disagreement in a way, and you have to be genuine about your questions, and you are genuine about your questions, which is so much. I mean, for me, it's a relief because I prefer talking to you than to many Christians who are in denial.
Agreed.
I think more of us should be like Tevye, the you know, from Fiddler on the Roof, and have that relationship with God, because there's no distancing in that relationship.
We're all a little bit content, aren't we? And unquestioning. That's our problem, I suppose. Maybe it's a Western thing, and in the way we're brought up.
We've got a Westernized version of what faith should be as well, which is that we're sanitized, catered for.
But I think you are kind of step away from the supernatural in your life, and that's and that's something that so much irritates me, because I don't know. Each time I see you, I feel this kind of something in my spirit just stirs up, because I don't know. Because there is so many things I feel so much the same as you feel about, and okay, I'm not. I know I don't really have enough courage yet to take my questions, some of those questions, directly to him, because it's a very painful experience. It is a very painful experience. Like, this is a little passage about this Syrophoenician woman I told you. It took me some time and some anger. Mm-hmm. But then I addressed it directly, and I said, I want to know how the things are.
Yeah.
Many things like that I asked him, and many of my views are probably quite controversial, I suppose. If I would start stating them, I'm so kind of on the...
This is the perfect place for those.
I'm kind of on the verge of orthodoxy myself, but I don't care.
I really don't care. People identify. They don't want to hear the usual platitudes and mealy-mouthed stuff. You know, they want a bit of truth. You're being truthful, and you shouldn't be scared of saying what you feel.
Mm. Yeah, you are right, because I... Funnily enough, I haven't actually asked the person
direct
that I think you
asked all the secretaries.
Yeah, it's like if there's a way of getting an answer.
Receptionist.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the most direct way of getting an answer is to go to the source and okay, at this moment, I don't believe that source exists, but it wouldn't harm me. Like trying.
Do you actually mean that statement? Because you're shaking your fist at him at the same time saying he doesn't exist. Who are you shaking your fist at?
I'm shaking my fist not at him, but the fact that. And how people that do believe in him, I don't think act the consistent, right way. Yeah. And it's just, it's
well,
not.
They don't act like him because they're all as imperfect as each other.
But at the same time, that's not an excuse. We should be acting more like him than we currently do.
No, I don't. Well, sure. I don't even mean that we should be acting. I don't think we should be acting like him. I just think we should be acting more realistically and not have our heads up in the clouds. Even if that means, you know, just criticizing more and questioning a lot more, and even, you know, just being more angry and not. Not trying to be like Jesus, but questioning, you know, the motives and just every like facet. Because if you're a Christian, it means it's a massive part of your life, and it's too big a part to just sort of.
For me, it's just another proof that, you know, that whatever you call it, but for me, it's another proof that His Spirit is directly over you. That's what I think. I mean, okay,
what you just said about. This you is must kind be of less like Jesus. You must question the motives. That's exactly what Jesus did a lot of. He just questioned people.
This is prophetic sharpness in you. Really, it is. It is a sharp calling for something. If you are in this disagreement, you know, like there were people. I don't know. In this country, it happened, isn't it? 2 centuries ago. When there were people who were looking at the Bible, then they were looking at the slaves, and they were, you know, and they were angry about it. Yeah. And you know, when you read Bible, on the one hand, you see Jesus preaches about love and love your neighbor as you know you want, treat them as you want to be treated, and then you read all other scriptures that are not really contradict to the slavery. I mean, they're not for it, but they're not explicitly against it. And you know, it took. Discourage those people kind of constantly approaching him. What do you want? And are you really caring or you don't care? And again they did it with this kind of edgy I know, because they were different than the mainstream.
That's
And they brought about change.
It was a Christian society, but here was him, another Christian, questioning it.
Yeah.
Because the Christian society had become non-Christian.
So that's what we all need. In all times, we need. And
prophetic voices we need.
And that's, and I mean, that's what I believe we are living now today. When the last book of the Old Testament finishes with this, speaking about the Elijah return, and I personally think this means about this speaks about the renewal of the prophetic movement in the last days. And when I look at you, I can directly see that you are one of those.
But he doesn't have the gift of faith.
Doesn't matter.
It's the faith is what you struggles with.
But yeah. I mean that doesn't matter. It really doesn't because what you know, if you would really dare to
step out
to think how you know who he really is, and don't look at us and don't look at the you know nice Christians and what they say because 99% we speak about him with from our ignorance. And not from our knowledge and not from our experience. You can see if someone is genuine about something, you know, you can't question the experience, but are we being so nice? I mean, I'm referring to myself. 99% of things I know about him is because I've read something and it's so, you know, it doesn't carry any kind of load. Mm. But if you are there on the street and someone is dying, if you are there on the street and someone needs help and you are in this place, okay, am I going to pray for it or I'm going to ignore it or whatever, then when your faith is really, you know, kind of
tested
and you're seeing that, you're trying to lay hands on the ill people and you see, you know, sometimes they get better, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And that's how we really know him, isn't it? I don't really, you know, one of the signs of the last days, according to Paul, was that the people were to appear godly, but at the same time will deny the power of godliness.
Tombs. Whitewashed tombs.
Yeah. So I think that's what happens to us. That's what happens to my heart, because I'm to many people I appear godly, but many areas of my life are not really soaking and I don't really produce a fruit of godliness in my life. And I'm being honest now, and those are the areas of my life I only heard about him. Yeah, I heard this is how it's supposed to be. I heard the Christian's supposed to do that. I heard the Christian's supposed to be doing that. And with those few bits and pieces of the scriptures, I really took courage and took back to him. It took me sometimes a year, sometimes a few months, sometimes a lot of crying, sometimes bugging my hands against the wall. And then I got the answer and was so much different. There are just, I mean, literally, there are a few things in my life which is nothing to be really proud of, but that's where I am now, and that's where my quest is. I'm heading towards really getting those basic truths I already know, and trying to really grasp them in a way, in the way that will produce a real fruit. Yeah. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go empty-handed to people. I don't want to say, you know, you're suffering, that's okay. I don't want, you know, I want to be real. Mm. And that takes a lot of, you know.
It's an honest way to live as well. It's a hard, because it's too easy to get your theology from other people or from reading, but you're talking about a direct relationship with God is what we should all.
And it's not just getting it from, like, other people. It's also giving your version of God your personal attributes as well, and like describing God as being sad. I don't know how much of that is, you know, being realistic or giving God characteristics that we're comfortable with.
Say, right, the beginning, isn't it? The beginning of the fall. I've forgotten the words, but
was it the Talmud?
For the Bible. Yeah, nothing to do with the Egyptians. No.
But it's but there's that aspect of it as well, and that's what I'm always suspicious of when people
generally
give,
the church
give God emotions and give him characteristics. Like people that say God's got a sense of humour, I'm very suspicious about. And just things like
I think he's above what we would call a sense of humour.
I was actually thinking on the way here that if there was a God, he must have a sense of humour, because who else would colour poo and chocolate exactly the same? Because they're like, one is delicious, the other's
incredible insight.
I'm thinking, now that's funny, now that's comedy. But other than that, I don't know.
Well, I think basically what we're saying partly is the church is too nice.
Yeah,
and it's not really enough.
Not getting stuck into the world enough.
And not just a corporate thing,
a nice
but ourselves as well. Yeah. We can't just sort of point out at the higher people, which ask ourselves.
Need a few more Yakovs.
So you think about with Simon, because it doesn't have a personal relationship with God, it's how he sees God expressed by other Christians is where his only input.
That's not the reason why I don't believe. That's the reason why I don't like most Christians.
Yeah, but that's why you're angry.
That's why I was angry this week.
I don't like most Christians either.
Yeah, well, most Christians probably don't like most Christians. That's why there's so many different types of Christians. Like
we're
it's a gang
all in
warfare.
Agreement here, except Colin, who likes everybody.
You're lovely people.
But then you've got the whole, you know, existence argument, which is another subject. So, and that's the real.
The whole
rational and.
There's just one other thing I kind of feel prompted to mention, and it is on the subject, but it's kind of slowly departing, but not so much. And this is something again. Sorry, I'm picking on you.
I'm the only one.
Why am I doing this? Because the part of a Christian belief is that we admit that the world is in a state of a battle, yeah. And something. And you are not aware of that's what makes me angry, really. That there are other entities than God around. And
exactly.
And when you think about, I know you may be not there yet, but you're very close to actually see and to actually experience both of the worlds. That there is a God and there's a Satan, and this realm, the realm we are in, it's mainly his domain.
Yeah.
And that's a very sad thing, but you know, it will take a bit of more time to show you that, maybe in the Bible or whatever, but I personally experience both. That's why I'm so angry, because that's again something I believe, but I'm not quite sure how the people around this table are. Yeah. We both at the times. But I'm saying now about something which is a bit controversial. It depends how.
Depends how you're
gonna explain it. I believe that as long as we are here and we are not with him, we are prone to both influences, and because of that, you can have Christians saying things that are demonic in their nature, and you can have Christians that say godly things in their nature, and this can even happen in the very same kind of setting. That happened to Peter. Yeah, when he confessed Christ as God, and then Jesus said, blessed you are, Peter Bar-Jonah, because it is my Father who revealed this to you. And then next sentence, Jesus was led to said to him, go behind me, Satan, because whatever he said was from other influence.
And told Jesus not to die.
And this is a personal struggle, but what I think most of the fruit of Satan inflicting pain on humankind is what I see in you. This is the fruit, being angry on God for something that he's not responsible for, being angry on him because this is actually you look at something that is directly kind of outcome of his mischief, and then you kind of associate this this to him. And the saddest point about that, to some extent, I mean, that's again my opinion, to some extent we are all deceived about who God really is. Yeah. And so often we take his voice, we kind of, you know, we are living in this schizophrenic world, and obviously this is a very painful experience. Yeah. But this is something that most people are being put off in their Christian life. They've been put off from the supernatural, because when you're getting into supernatural, you're kind of being aware of both worlds, and you can easily, you know, you can easily go one way and on the other way, you know.
Yeah.
So when I had my kind of renewal in my life, and I thought, okay, I have to sort out this area of my life, because the Christianity without power is basically pathetic, really. So I decided, okay, I have to sort it out. And, you know, and it was the most fascinating time in my life, but also the most scaring time in my life, because when I really prayed for some things in my life to happen, and
so you have to deal with demonic
influences. Yeah, I have to deal with demonic influences. Yeah. And it took me some time to actually pray for discernment and actually see. So at the moment, I have some measure of discernment, what is what. But obviously, in so many respects, I'm still deceived. I am really deceived. It was just
a gradual cleansing process, yeah. Really. I mean,
and it is very scary when you think that you took something that you would, you know, you would die. This is God. And then you realize one day, this is devil. And this is really, I mean, this is really scary to admit. This is really painful to admit. I think, but this is biblical, you know. When you read Book of Job, I think that's something that is very powerful stated in this book, because Book of Job starts from the issue of suffering, and it starts in front of the God's throne, and there is this discourse between him and Lucifer, and then we are. It's almost as a scene of a Shakespearean drama, you know, where you let into, you know, you depart this supernatural world, and then you have this stage on earth, and the things happen over there. Mm. And up to the last chapters, we don't kind of directly see the supernatural world, but we have to understand Book of Job in this context of the supernatural that happens in the context of this, you know, Satan have a chat with God about who the people are and blah blah blah. And then what is the biggest benefit from this book? And I think you could take a lesson. Just go through it and read it and try to discern who is speaking for God and who is speaking for him, for the evil one. Because the most difficult thing, and the one of the biggest kind of things that I gained from this book, is that both people can speak from both influences. Mm. And this is very scary. But you can even if you're brave enough, you can try to discern and name those spirits behind the things. And the saddest thing is about it, there are some passages when Job says about God that he rejoices inflicting a pain on people, just something along those lines you're saying. And I'm 100% sure this is not God. This is absolutely the devil that is above him. And when I hear exact words now from you, I don't have the slightest, disbelief that you are being influenced by someone else. Mm. And this is the scary thing, because if you are not being influenced by him, then either it's your kind of original ideas or you're being influenced by someone else. Mm. And that's really something that you have to be aware of.
And those influences aren't necessarily direct, but they're very often instilled in the media and general opinions and societies, you know, social views. And so that's what gets manipulated by Satan, is society, the media. And so that's partly, you know, how people's influence is through the thinking, through the mind. That's where Satan works, is in the mind, the understanding and the thinking. Yeah. And most of that thinking does come from the world that he is actually infused with his thinking.
The spirit of the air.
Yeah.
Well, it says that we know in part and prophesy in part as well. So, sorry, I've forgotten your name.
Andre.
Andre, what Andre says, yeah, it's completely right. You know, what we know is so small in context of it all, and that's why it is a keeping ongoing journey. Mm. Paul refers to some people as infants and some people as mature, but always says we still only know in part.
Mm. If we just had a window,
which isn't an excuse.
If we just had a window into the supernatural world to see exactly what the forces
is. Those fallen angelic beings who followed the old Satan and the remaining angels who are, you know, working directly for the Creator.
Real cliche, but just, you know, the scriptural undergirding of it is Ephesians 6, isn't it? About put on the armour of God. We're not fighting against human beings, but against the wicked spiritual forces in the heavenly world, the rulers, authorities, and cosmic powers of this dark age.
And so much of the church is being fooled by those dark spirits. I mean, we've been talking about Todd Bentley and all those, all the fake,
and it's getting on, and it's further along,
you know, there's real healing, there's fake healing, and people get drawn into this experiential Christianity, which is based on a false spirit.
Other influences other than God, and it's
angel Emma and all that stuff.
As Andre said, it's having to have the discernment, isn't it?
That's right. Discernment is really that. Yeah, the right voices. There's probably fake discernment as well. You know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I see.
Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.